Konnichiwa, Beburi desu. Women's Football Podcast desu.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.
Hi there, welcome along to the Women's Football Podcast. It's nice to be back in the presenting chair, and alongside me is Kieran Tavem, as always.
And it's nice to have you back in the presenting chair, mate, although I have to say I did enjoy playing the role in the last podcast, and I thought Ish and Helen did a very good job stepping into your large shoes.
I thought you did all right, to be fair. I thought you did all right, but now the professional's back in the house. So, anyway, plenty to be talking about on today's podcast. So let's rattle off what we've got for you. The World Cup qualifying campaigns are well underway, with a couple of teams playing a couple of games already. We will have a closer look at England versus Wales. Someone who unites those two countries is Jane Ludlow, and I managed to catch up with her. Of course, she's now very much involved at Reading after calling time on her playing career. We also have a new correspondent.
We do, yeah. We've got Brian Maguire, who's going to be our regular German expert. So he's going to be doing a little roundup, much like Emily has done so in the past on the NWSL. So Brian will be giving us his first background check on what's been going on in Germany.
Strong German name, Brian Maguire.
It is very strong. Very strong.
And then we'll close the show with a very interesting story about American midfielder / striker Beverly Goebel-Yanez, who is playing out in Japan and who's just won the Japanese top division. So there we go, let's crack on.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Follow the podcast on Twitter
at WFPod.
Right, let's get cracking and talk about World Cup qualification. A couple of games already being played, a few early pace setters, but this round of games coming up on Saturday?
Saturday the 26th, yeah, absolutely right, mate.
Good. A few home nation clashes, and we'll start with Scotland-Northern Ireland. Interesting to see Northern Ireland playing their first game of this qualification.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like, you look at what happens in men's qualification, all teams tend to play on the same day. Northern Ireland haven't kicked a ball yet. Wales have only played one game, whereas a lot of other nations have played two. But yeah, it'll be interesting, Scotland-Northern Ireland. I think Scotland will be overwhelming favourites and they should win that game. But, you know, home nation clashes, there's always that pride at stake. And, you know, maybe Northern Ireland will give a good account of themselves, I'm sure.
Scottish football obviously going great guns at the moment. Scotland, I mean, as you say, great form. 7-2 winners over the Faroe Islands, 7-0. Versus Bosnia. So good luck, Northern Ireland. If you can keep them from scoring seven, that's a good start.
Well, it is, but I think, you know, Scotland are getting stronger. They narrowly missed out on the Euros, didn't they? And you look at the players that they've got. They've got players like Lisa Evans, who are playing out in Germany with Potsdam. They've got, you know, a lot of players playing in that Glasgow City team that are progressing well in the Champions League, which I know we're going to touch on later. But yeah, Scotland are a good side at the moment and are getting better, and it's going to be very difficult for Northern Ireland. I'd be the first to hold my hands up. I don't know an awful lot about the Northern Ireland side, but certainly be worth, in, you know, seeing how they get on against a relatively strong Scottish team.
Speaking of Bosnia, they have a great chance to bounce back from that defeat to Scotland. They're playing Sweden.
Good luck on that one. What can you say? If they've shipped seven against Scotland, I dread to say it, but it could be double figures for Sweden in that one. We know how strong Sweden are, and with Schelin and Aslani and the, you know, the lots of other attacking players that they have, you know, it's going to be very, very difficult for them. So all I can say is good luck.
Sweden, of course, already sitting on 3 points after a 2-0 win over Poland. Denmark are kicking off their Group 3 campaign. They are playing Serbia, who lost 9-0 to runaway early pace setters Switzerland. Strangely, Lara Dickerman doing the business, clearly.
Yeah, obviously they've got Lara, they've got Backman as well, who plays in Sweden, who many England fans will know as being the player that dived to get Rachel Brown sent off in a World Cup playoff game a few years ago. But they're decent, Switzerland, but Serbia are, I hate to say it, are nothing to write home about. And again, I'm sounding disrespectful like I did a few weeks ago, but I
do. You need to stop that.
I know, but, you know, say it how it is, mate. And while I don't mean any disrespect, you know, there's no point in sort of, you know, tiptoeing around it. I expect Denmark to win that game against Serbia quite comfortably. They have some good players. We saw that for ourselves in the Euros, and I'm pretty sure Denmark will come through that one without any scares.
Denmark playing the Swiss at home on the 31st of October, so that should be a good one as well. France are actually sitting out this round of fixtures, and Spain are playing Estonia on the 27th, so that should be
easy Spain win.
There we go. However, we obviously need to talk about England-Wales. Wales sitting on 3 points with a 1-0 win over Belarus. England did slightly better than that against Belarus, of course, 6-0. And then followed that up with an 8-0 win over Turkey. On paper, this looks like a very comfortable England win.
Yeah, and you know, I think we've spoken about it before, and I think the media are obviously enjoying the fact that this is going to be a home nations clash. There's lots of quotes. I've just read something in the Sunday Mirror this morning with Jess Fishlock saying that England should underestimate Wales at their peril. And she's right, you know, world rankings won't come into this fixture. You know, this is a home nations clash. Those players all know each other because many of them play in the same teams in the WSL and in lower leagues as well. But, you know, It's difficult to compare Wales and England, and I don't think it's fair to either. There's 20-odd places between them in the world rankings. Yes, Wales only beat Belarus 1-0, but there's only one place between them in the rankings, mate. And it's, you know, England are a lot stronger. England have got a bigger squad of players to pick from. And, you know, if Wales can get something out of that, and there's a good chance that they will, you know, that's a really good result for them and a really good achievement. And it's not going to be easy for England, but, you know, it'd be an interesting one, definitely.
And any team with Jess Fishlock in midfield is always going to give you a tough ride. I mean, she is a winner.
Oh, absolutely. And you look at the impact that she's had at Glasgow. You know, they are going great guns. They've obviously won the Scottish League, which, with the greatest respect to the other teams in Scotland, they probably would have done even without her. But she is that driving force in that midfield. But, I mean, I went to the Wales-Belarus game in Cardiff and for their first qualifier. And, you know, Jess had a good game. Helen Ward proved the match winner on that day, getting her 30th goal on her 50th appearance. Yeah, which is,
congratulations, Helen.
Yeah, absolutely. Congrats to Helen. You know, we're delighted for her. But she's an important player for them. Then you've got other players, Kylie Davis at the back, you know, Sophie Ingle at the back, you know, Tash Harding out wide. They've got some good players, you know. I mean, I think they're going to miss Gwennon Harries because Gwennon is Wales through and through, and she would definitely have been a big influence on this game. But it won't be easy for England. It won't be easy at all, you know. And obviously there's still a little bit of uncertainty there. You know, who is going to be the new England manager? We expected someone to be in place by the time this fixture came about. And obviously the FA have decided to defer that decision. So Brent Hills will remain in charge for the next two games for England.
We've got to talk about that, I think. You can't say that you're going to have someone in charge for these two games and then push it back. That little bit of uncertainty could allow Wales in.
Potentially. I mean, obviously, I think I'm actually backing the FA on this one. I think if you're not sure who you're going to go with, then delay it. You know, yes, they had the intention of having someone in place by the time these two games came about. But if they're not sure and they want to think about it a bit more, then I back that. You know, we want to make sure the right person comes in. Hope Powell was in that position for a very, very long time. They need to get someone in who's going to, you know, have some longevity, who's going to bring success to the team. And if they want a bit more time to think about that, then so be it. But yeah, it obviously means that it could let Wales back in, because you know as well as I do that if there had been a new manager in place, it would have been their first game. And those girls would have been going out there to try and impress whoever that person might have been.
I must say, I was talking to Tony Duggan recently, and she was saying that the build-up to each game and what they do in preparation has remained the same. So actually, it's not too much of a hindrance to England at the moment. And if you would like to read more about Tony's thoughts, she's got a blog up, which has only just come out. So definitely check out that on our WF blog page, which will give you the details at the end of the show. But in the meantime, you managed to get the end of the Wales manager's press conference.
I did, yeah. I sat in on Jarmo Matikainen's post-match presser against Belarus, and obviously he had, you know, a lot to say about that game, but he was also posed the question about the England game, and here's what he had to say about it.
It's one of the best teams in the world. They have been, they're used to being ranked in top five, and obviously very disappointed after the Women's Euro. As I said, that this is a bad time to play them. But we've got 4 weeks to prepare, and we look that game as any other game. We try to get as many points as possible from this group. And there's 3 points available against a very, very tough team. Our approach will be a little bit different, but we've been looking into to women's senior team development process as a whole, and that just gives us another challenge. Nothing is going to be settled on that game. Whatever we get is going to be bonus, and that's what we aim to do.
So that was Jarmo Matikainen. There you go.
Good pronunciation. I know you were worried about that one, mate.
Talking about the upcoming England-Wales game, former player, I should say now, who knows those two teams very well is Jane Ludlow, who we managed to catch up on. About time as well, because obviously back in August she was named Reading's first team manager and director of women and girls football, which is a great appointment for her, and I managed to catch up with her. But a great player.
Yeah, and I think it's a good appointment for Reading. I think that it's an opportunity for Jane to cut her teeth at a good club, and, you know, and they're obviously going to be playing in the WSL2 next year, so it's a good opportunity for her to make her mark. But you're absolutely right, and I mean, she's, you know, the word legend is overused quite a lot, but she is, you know, she's Arsenal's all-time, you know, top goal scorer from midfield. You know, I think she's got over 200 goals or something ridiculous like that. So, you know, she is a legend, and she kind of left a little bit under the radar. It's sort of, you know, she started the season, but then, it, you know, it was announced that she wouldn't be, you know, at the club anymore. And then all of a sudden she was turning up at Reading. So shame she didn't get a bit of a send off. But, you know, she was a very, very good player. And I think, having spoken to a few people, you know, outside of the Wales camp, that they think she'll be a really good manager and potentially, you know, in the future, maybe the next Wales manager after Jarmo Matikainen.
You never know. So here is my interview with her, and listen out for why she's known as Debs.
Well, Jane, welcome to the Women's Football Podcast, and belated congratulations on your role at Reading. How's it all going?
Yeah, thank you very much. It's great at the moment. It's a lot of fun, a lot of work, but very worthwhile. To be honest, the club have been great so far, and the organisation that was already here before I came was fantastic. So it's been an interesting 6 weeks.
Was that always a route that you were going to go down?
With regards to the coaching, yes, probably for the last 10 years, obviously I've been interested in it, and I've been fortunate enough to learn from some very good coaches involved in the women's game and the men's game. And as a person, I think I was always questioning things, I guess, because I like to learn. So yeah, definitely the last 2 or 3 years, it was definitely something that I could see my future being involved in.
With respect to Reading, a player of your stature could have gone to perhaps a bigger club. Is Reading a good fit for you?
Yeah, probably the best for me, really. The more I found out since coming here, definitely a fantastic fit for me. I think right now, especially clubs in the WSL1 don't realise the actual setup we have at Reading, but I'm hoping we can build on that the next few years and hopefully achieve the goal of getting up into the WSL1, where I think people will take a little bit more notice of us as a club. But, you know, for us, the most important thing the next few years is to build a structure here that ends up bringing through senior players, hopefully for the next 10, 20 years for us. But to be fair, the actual men's side of the club have been terrific, and they see the women's game as a big part of the club and an area that they want to develop. So for me, the role I was given, the fact that I could come in here and work with some very good people who are here already, but develop something that is going to be a long-term strategy, hopefully, for the development of the women's game in the country.
Obviously, it's quite exciting at Reading, obviously going into WSL2. What's a realistic ambition for next season?
And the biggest thing, I think, for us is to go into that league and compete and put performances on week in, week out. That, you know, we're hard to beat. Two, hopefully we'll score a few goals along the way. But yeah, it's about getting in the league and competing, and I'm feeling like we can cope with the structured teams who are already being at a good level, I guess, for the last few years. One is probably Sunderland, I'm thinking of straight away, but there's other teams there as well, obviously Doncaster stepping down, who have played at very good levels over the last few years. And for us, it's a case of making sure we're ready come March and April to actually get on the pitch with those teams and compete.
I was going to say, because it is a strong division, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be a really competitive division, and you know, I think it's going to be an interesting few months when the season's up and running, because there's, like I said, you know, I have a lot of admiration for what some of the so-called smaller clubs in the country have done over the last few years with regards to the development structures and obviously the performances they put in the lower league. So for us, it's important, like I said, that we get a squad together and a team together that, one, are comfortable playing with each other. So we're going to use these next few months now to get that team together. And two, hopefully, we can go out there and put on good performances and compete with some of those teams who are, I guess, regarded at the moment to be favourites to be at the top of that league come the end of the year.
You're obviously known as a hard-working midfielder. What sort of style will you be introducing?
I was at Arsenal for 13 years, and obviously everybody knows the style of play we like to play there, and it'll be hopefully very similar in many ways when we get the structure going at Reading. Obviously, the club, before I came, have a certain way of playing, which involves getting the ball down and playing through midfield, hopefully, and playing some attractive football that people would want to come and watch. And I'm not going to stray away from that at all. That's a philosophy that was already in the club, and I'm hoping I can just build on it. There's a kind of there's a booklet that's about 1,000 pages long with our whole philosophy, so I won't bore you with all that. But we have a certain style that we're going to try and create next year. Hopefully we can do that in the next 6 months. It might take us a little bit longer, but hopefully we can start the process of doing that over the next 6 months.
Now, obviously, this is the future for you, but obviously, early on in last season, you made the decision to retire. Was that quite a tough decision after so long at Arsenal?
Yeah, it's tough in some ways, but easy in others, because, you know, I think I got to a point where my body couldn't cope with the training programme and actually competing at the highest level. And it wasn't really a hard decision at the end, because, you know, I was getting injured, I was coming back from injury, then I was getting injured again, and it's a cycle that any older player, I guess, would understand, and it's frustrating. And you get your body back to a level where you can compete with the younger, fresher kids, and then you get injured again. So to be honest, it was a frustrating period of my career, the last, I guess, 12 to 18 months. So alongside getting more interested in the coaching side of things and learning more from that point of view, I think it was an easy decision in the end. It was obviously hard for me to leave all my teammates and all the friends I've got to know very well over the last 13 years, but obviously they're still going to stay my friends for however long. But for now, it's a case of moving on to the next part of my life, which, unfortunately, I wish I could play for the next 40 years, but it's not going to happen. You know, time moves on for everybody.
Of course, you're no stranger to coaching. You've obviously been involved with Wales for a little while now. What's your role within the Welsh setup?
My main role at the moment is head under 16 coach for the girls. But alongside that, I work with Yarmo Matikainen as assistant under 17s coach, and occasionally I'm involved with the 19s. But my main role is with the under 16 girls, so with the babies, as I call them.
And obviously, there's some talent coming through at Wales.
You know, we to be fair, there's been a structure in place the last few years, which is very new, I guess, with regards to development plans and what have you. And when you compare to other home nations, we're very far behind them. But at least, you know, there's a positive aspect, because we've started to look into the women's game now, started to put development plans in process. But it's going to be, you know, a long process. We're looking at 10, 15 years ahead rather than the next 2 or 3 years. But having said that, you know, I've worked with these squads now for the last year, and we do have some great talent coming through. It's just making sure we get them in environments that are going to keep developing them so they don't disappear from the game.
And obviously that's a role that you'll want to combine with your job at Reading.
Different ways. Obviously, I learn a lot from my day-to-day job here, which I can take back to the Welsh squads as well. In the future, if any of the Welsh kids would like to come and join me, that would be absolutely fantastic, because, you know, we're trying to create something here for teenage girls to develop and hopefully be the best they can be. And whether that involves a lot of Welsh skills, that would be fantastic. But if not, you know, whoever ends up coming here, we'll do our best for them.
Now, we know that you have a number of nicknames. We know of Debs, for Deborah Meaden. care to enlighten us with any others?
all I can say is Deborah Meaden's probably one of the tamer ones. Right. But I'm sure you're all, everybody's thinking, oh, don't get, what, no, Deborah Meaden, no. There's no resemblance there. I wish it was because of the money I have. then that would be a good comparison, but unfortunately it's not that. I can't see it, to be honest, but teammates see something I don't, that's all I say.
So it's not for your dancing skills either, because of course she's on Strictly.
Well, dancing skills, I think I'm a mover.
All right.
I have an ability to clear a dance floor, so I'm not sure whether it's a good or a bad thing.
So,
Katie Chapman would know a lot about that, that's all I'll say.
I see. Are we ever going to see you on Strictly Come Dancing?
I don't think I could manage the heels. If they let me run around in a pair of football boots, I might manage it, but in heels, no.
Brilliant. Well, Jane, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast, and the very best of luck with Wales and Reading.
Okay, thank you very much.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFPod.
That was Jane Ludlow there, and a massive thank you to Jane because I messed her around an awful lot by going off on holiday.
Messed everyone around by going off on holiday. Did you, by the way, did you wear any Speedos on holiday?
I did, and I've got to say, there's a signed photo going to both Helen and Alicia, so lucky you. Sorry, Kieran, I only had two.
Oh, I don't think I'll miss that too much, mate.
Right, Jane Ludlow obviously won the Champions League back in 2007, and that leads nicely onto our little roundup of the Champions League. And we must congratulate both Arsenal and Glasgow City for completing their respective jobs. They will now meet in the next round.
Another battle of Britain, isn't it? We've got England v Wales in the international scene, and now Arsenal against Glasgow in the club scene. So, one that everyone's been talking about, one that people, you know, were half expecting to happen. They were certainly expecting Arsenal to overcome Kairat of Kazakhstan, but obviously Glasgow's job was a little bit more difficult against Standard Liège of Belgium, but they will now meet each other in the next round.
They certainly will, and we should extend that congratulations to Birmingham, who saw off PK35 Vanta of Finland.
Yeah, good job done by them, wasn't it? Professional job, 4-0 on aggregate, good 3-0 away win, which obviously took a bit of pressure off of them. So yeah, now a trip to... Who have they got in the next round, mate? I can't actually remember.
Neither can I. Elsewhere, no real big surprises and some very big scores, especially reigning champions Wolfsburg.
Just the 27, wasn't it?
Ouch.
Just the 27 against Paul Perna of Estonia. You don't want to see scores like that, do you? Not in a Champions League. You know, there's, you know, forever this challenge that women's football comes up against from the doubters and the haters, and you know, you want to try and convince them that women's football is a, you know, a worth a watch and is a competitive sport, and then you see scores like that. But it was always on the cards, unfortunately. Wolfsburg are the Champions League winners, and Perna are a part-time amateur side based in Estonia. So
not a recipe for a good game, is it?
It's not, no, but, you know, credit to Wolfsburg. They went out there, they did what they had to do. You know, they didn't let up clearly, but, you know, feel sorry for Perna. Hopefully they won't be too damaged by it and they'll come back stronger. And I'm sure that, you know, it'll be a good learning curve for them to have played against, you know, some of the best players in the world.
And elsewhere, Lyon are through.
Yep, beat FC 20, didn't they? Obviously, who Glasgow overcame in their group game earlier on in the competition. Yeah, it was pretty standard stuff for Lyon. You know, they're class all over the pitch. I can't, you know, I've spoken about them highly enough times already.
One moment of particular class.
Oh, in the away leg, yeah. I mean, Lotte Schelin scored an absolute beauty of a goal. I know you said off the recording that you see that all the time in men's football, but I've not seen many goals like that in the women's game. You know, she's turned a defender, she's at an angle, and she's, you know, she's bent the goal, bent the ball.
Bent the goal? That's some strike.
I know, yeah. But slip of the tongue. Bent the ball. The ball started out wide, and it's just crept into the top corner. You know, it was just an absolute beaut, and you know, it was a lovely goal, and it was a comfortable win for them over the two legs.
I got to say, I've got a goal that's going to top that.
Go on,
Stephanie Roach of Piemont United. I hope I've said that right. In the Irish League, scored an absolute worldie, and it's on our Twitter feed at WFPod. Definitely check it out. It's got 141,000 views already. Which is some going. It is Bergkamp-esque.
It is. I can't add more than that. It is Bergkamp-esque, exactly.
Right, going back to the Champions League, Paris Saint-Germain are out. Two or so have seen them off.
Yeah, close encounter. I watched both legs, and it was a very professional job by Tirisso. They obviously took the lead in the first leg 2-1. Kristen Press was the difference. She got both their goals, and you know, they went to Paris in the second leg and did a job. You know, they were solid. Whitney Engen made her debut in the second leg and obviously shored up an already strong defence. And yeah, disappointing that PSG are out at this early stage, because I think they would have been a good side to have watched throughout the competition. You know, they gave a good account of themselves, but Tirisso were just very well organised in that second leg especially, and PSG just couldn't break them down. They didn't create a lot of chances, and you know, fair play to them. Dulli and Aslani didn't get a sniff, and you know, Tirisso were through, and fair play to them.
I've got to say, the one thing that struck me when I saw that result was, does Tobin Heath go back to the NWSL early?
I doubt it. The NWSL pre-season doesn't start until January. I would imagine she would see out the league campaign until May, you know, April, May. And then she'll probably return to Portland sometime after that, much like Megan Rapinoe will do so for Lyon in June.
Right, we end on Malmo, who are also through. It's been a good couple of weeks for Malmo, to be honest. 5-0 winners over LSK Kvinna of Norway. Gives them an 8-1 aggregate win. And they then sealed the Damalsvenskan.
Damalsvenskan.
Oh, I was close. My Swedish is not that strong, to be fair.
Well, you know, when you spend a week out there earlier this year, you pick up one or two things. But yeah, the Damalsvenskan title was won by Malmo, as expected. We've been talking about them over the last few months. Tirisso were, of course, their main contenders, but Tirisso had a few slip-ups along the way, a few too many draws. I mean, you know, it's as we record this, the last Damalsvenskan league games are actually taking place. But in the lead up to this, Tirisso have only lost one game. Malmo have only lost one game. But the difference is, at the time of recording, Tirisso had drawn, I think off the top of my head, 6 games. Malmo had only drawn 3. So there's your difference. You know, it's turning those draws into wins. Malmo are a strong side. You know, Anya Mittag has been phenomenal for them. You know, Backerman has been, you know, ably supporting her up front. And, you know, that's been the difference. They've scored a lot of goals. They've been solid in defence and they deserve the league. And obviously it's, you know, a big challenge for them ahead, because they've now got a big game in the Champions League because they now face Wolfsburg. So, you know, good few weeks for them, but certainly a lot of work to come for them as well.
Yeah, that'll be some game, that Champions League tie. What's going on in France?
Lyon atop.
Really?
Well, as do you expect? Lyon atop. They've won every game so far. But I tell you what, mate, while you were on holiday, they had a little bit of a scare. They had a 3-2 win.
Whoa!
A 3-2 win. Their goalkeeper, and it wasn't their first choice goalkeeper, it was a reserve goalkeeper whose name has escaped my head. Sorry, I've come horribly underprepared for this podcast. But she was sent off, and Lyon had used all of their substitutes. So Franco, who is obviously Lyon's right back, had to go in goal towards the end. And Lyon really had to battle towards the end and only won the game 3-2. But every other game has been pretty comfortable. PSG are not far behind them. They had a good win against Montpellier a couple of weeks ago, which was obviously a big win for them, because Montpellier, obviously with Jenny Beattie, will obviously be one of the teams that will be at the right end of the league. Givisi, as expected, are up there as well. But it's standard stuff, mate. Lyon leading the way. Don't expect them to slip up at any point.
You know? Unless you take out both goalkeepers.
Unless you take out both goalkeepers. But yeah, it's as expected in France, I'm afraid, mate.
Right, let's switch our attentions to Germany. And we have the pleasure of announcing our brand new correspondent. I'm going to let you do that.
Yeah, Brian Maguire, who's been a follower of ours on Twitter for quite some time, is actually based out in Germany. He's a Turbina Potsdam supporter, so he knows his stuff, and we thought it would be a good opportunity to get someone on board who's actually based out in Germany. So rather than us rambling on about what's going on in Germany, here's Brian with his short roundup.
The German Bundesliga is into round 6, a quarter way through a season which came in on a high after Wolfsburg and the national team's triumphs in Europe and the signing of a TV deal with Eurosport. Viewing figures have been encouraging and attendances have been up all across the league. 3,000 watched Wolfsburg, the champions, come to play the current leaders Turbina Potsdam. Potsdam will regret not putting the game beyond reach at half-time. A number of chances, but only one goal from Paulina Bremer. And after the break, the champions really came on strong. Martina Müller equalised, and they gave up a few chances as well to win the game. The draw is encouraging for the other two teams, who are chasing the title. Bayern Munich kept their challenge going despite their horrendous injury list with a 2-0 home victory over Bayer Leverkusen. Sarah Hagen got both the goals there, while super strong Frankfurt simply cannot seem to avoid drama. Going 2-0 down away to Jena, they came back to lead 3-2 and then had to play the last 25 minutes down to 10 when their goalkeeper was sent off. Elsewhere, Essen won the derby against Duisburg 3-0, whilst ex-Chelsea player Sofia Jakobsen helped Kloppenburg to their first win of the season, 2-0 over Sindelfingen. The last game, Hoffenheim sneaked a last gasp 3-2 win over Freiburg, something of an upset, and has their second win of the season. The Bundesliga goes into a two-week international break and comes back with two real clashes in the Champions League. Wolfsburg playing Malmo and Potsdam have the big one against Lyon.
So there we go, the first instalment from our brand new German correspondent, Brian Maguire. Welcome to the team. No NWSL fixtures, of course, but the national team has some very glamour friendlies coming up.
They do, yeah. They're obviously playing Australia the day that we're recording, so we will talk about that one when we have our next podcast, or certainly in a future podcast. They've also got two friendlies against fellow Southern Hemisphere opposition in New Zealand, but the real, you know, real big opposition, big game that they've got coming up is against the Samba Girls from Brazil, which is being played in November.
From where?
Brazil.
What's wrong with that?
Terrible. Please continue.
I will continue. So yeah, they're playing Brazil. I think it's something along the lines of the 10th of November. Massive game, obviously, between two of the major nations in women's football. Big opportunity for the likes of Marta to show what she's capable of against the, you know, the best team in the world. We know what Marta's about, but I think she's been a little bit quiet over the last year to 18 months. Didn't have the greatest of Olympic games. So it'll be interesting to see how she copes against the strength and the force of the United States. Obviously, the US coach, Tom Samani, has announced his squad for the games against Australia and New Zealand. There's not too many surprises in there, but a name worth looking out for is Morgan Bryan. Morgan Bryan's currently at university in Virginia, really making a name for herself, scored against Mexico in the United States last international, and she's really being built up as a really big thing in the United States, and certainly one to look out for.
All credit to her for continuing her studies, because it could be very easy to ignore that, perhaps.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of players do, to be honest, mate. I think most of them do stay in college and see it out. And I think she's in her junior year, so she's not even going to be entering the draft this year. I think it's going to be the, you know, next year or year after. I'm not too familiar with the college system out in the States, but she certainly won't be in the NWSL next year. But a name to look out for, already making a name for herself. Crystal Dunn is another one in the colleges. I think she's ahead of Morgan in terms of her university career, so I think she may be in the NWSL a little bit sooner, but she's certainly another one that's worth looking out for.
Right, on the subject of Americans, we tend to like rooting out the hidden stories in world football, and I think we've found one. Beverly Gobel-Yanez is a name that perhaps not too many people will know. She, of course, used to play for Western New York Flash and actually won the WPS title in 2011. She is now playing out in Japan and has just won the, this is going to be tricky for me, the Nadeshiko League Division 1. Well, nailed it, mate. Nailed it. Well, they have just won their second consecutive title, and she has been playing up front for them, despite the fact that she started her career as a midfielder, which worked out nicely for us because I managed to catch her. Now, I have to admit, Kieran, that I didn't, this interview could have gone on forever. Absolutely forever, and this podcast would have been about 12 hours long. So hopefully this is a flavour of Beverly's story, and it started with how she ended up in Japan.
Actually came here on a trip with Sky Blue FC. I was signed with them for the 2012 WPS season, and I woke up one day, my agent told me basically the league is folded. I kind of hung up thinking, oh my gosh, you know, it seems like we're about to start soon. So I immediately was thinking, you know, what the heck am I going to do? We got emails from Sky Blue saying that the preseason trip to Japan was still a go because everything had been paid for. So I thought, you know, at this point, I just want to go play soccer. I don't want to stress about what I'm going to do, you know, where I'm going to be. I just want to play. So I came here with Sky Blue and we played INAC in two matches, and I just remember thinking my first match that we played them, I never knew a woman's team could just possess so nicely. Like, it just felt good to be on the field with them, and them possessing the ball and their technical ability was just unreal. So afterwards, four of us got invited to a training session, and I thought, you know, I'm so excited to see what this training session looks like because their game was ridiculously good. they were possessing so well. So I would like to see the drills that they're doing at practice. I'm never thinking anything of it as like a possible sign with the team. So I got there and everyone was so nice, so welcoming. I started practicing with them and I was in love immediately with the style of soccer. And we luckily, two of us of those four got offered contracts and we were asked to decide within a week what we would like to do. And I just kept thinking about it over and over again on the like 17-hour plane ride home. And I just kept thinking to myself, like, this is just something I can't pass up because of the experience I had and playing with them on the field. It's just like going to be an amazing opportunity for me. So I said yes. And I've been here ever since.
It's not your first experience of playing overseas because I believe you had a little spell in Finland as well.
Yes, I did. I actually went to Finland right after Western New York Flash through some friends of a friend, basically. I found out that Finland needed a player to compete in UEFA Champions League. So I went there for only 7 weeks to compete in UEFA Champions League against a Spanish team, Rayo Vallecano.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a ton of fun. But that was my first true, like, outside of the country experience. And after that, I was just kind of, like, addicted to traveling. So I was much more open to the idea of, like, moving to Japan because I had just spent 7 weeks in a different country and I just enjoyed it so much.
It's certainly been a good move for you because INAC have just been dominant in the last few years, and particularly this year with, obviously, winning the league and the cup.
Yes, I mean, I've really enjoyed my time here. When I first got here, you know, it was a bit difficult for me to catch up technically. I felt almost behind technically. And I was just really excited to see how much I would grow because the people and the staff, like, all understood that where they wanted the team to be. They wanted the team to be world class and they expected world class every day. So I knew that I was going to grow from the experience and I was going to hopefully become a better player. I think maybe, you know, I'm not sure, but I actually play center forward here, and that's the first time I've ever played center forward in my entire career. Within a few weeks of being here, the center forward tore ACL, and so I was asked to step into that position, and it was a bit of a bumpy ride at first trying to figure out, you know, use them in that position to be the best I could be for the team. So not only was I trying to adapt technically and adapt to the culture, I was also trying to adapt to a brand new position, but I didn't speak the language. So it was very difficult at first, but I was very hopeful because of the people around me and how kind they were and how willing they were to teach me their style of soccer that I was going to continue to grow in that position as long as I had a positive outlook about it.
Let's talk about off the field for a minute.
Okay.
Hard was it initially? What sort of difficulties did you have to overcome?
It was very difficult. It was hard because I wanted to get to know my teammates and I wanted to get to know, you know, just people, you know, maybe my neighbor or something like that. And not being able to speak the language made it very difficult. But there's one thing that I have learned, and that Japanese people are so kind and so welcoming. And I honestly felt right at home right away. Pretty much the only thing was the language barrier. That was the biggest one. But other than that, they were so welcoming and just so excited to have me and the other American player, Becky, there, that we just always felt welcome. So it wasn't really the adapting part. Was off the field was very hard. But I mean, I don't know. I just can't explain how welcoming they were. Like, it was so nice to feel like they were there for you in the process.
And obviously having a fellow countryman there as well probably helped.
Yes, yes. And actually, I've played with Becca my entire professional career. I was with her at DC, and then I moved to Flash, and she went to Magic Jack, and then she came over from Magic Jack halfway through season to Flash, and then we played two seasons here in INAC. So I've actually played with her my entire career, which is very not very common for players to be on the same team like that back-to-back for four seasons. So yeah. It was really nice to come here with someone that I really knew and that I consider like family to me. So I was really lucky and really thankful for that situation.
So what sort of things do you do sort of away from the club?
Away from the club, okay, I love Japanese food. I absolutely love How here in Japan, every little city is known for something different and some kind of different foods. So it's really, the culture is kind of like when you travel and go somewhere, you bring back your loved ones or your friends a snack or a popular dish or food from that area back home, because specific cities are all famous for certain snacks or certain foods or certain bakery baked goods. So it's kind of fun. It makes things, you know, a lot of fun. If you, when we travel by, you know, train at Shin Kobe, we have all of our Kobe, what's famous in Kobe. So if we're seeing friends on the other team, everyone's buying things in, you know, in the train station that are Kobe things to give as gifts. So I absolutely love Japanese food. I love Japanese culture, and I'm totally enjoying it off the field. It's just so welcoming, so welcoming.
And how does the country view their football? They must be quite passionate about it.
Yes, I'm extremely passionate. I would definitely say baseball and soccer are their two biggest sports here. So that is something that it's nice to be in an atmosphere where the women's game is so high, is viewed, you know, the people here love it and they love watching women's soccer. And it, I mean, it's the same in the U.S. It's growing too, but we're competing also with the NBA, with the NFL, the NHL. I mean, the MLB, there's just, you know, America's sports are where so many people, you know, would like to play. So it's just nice to experience this and to be in a place where women's soccer is so valued. The Nadeshiko national team players, you know, after the tsunami hit Japan, and they came home with that World Cup win, was just huge, you know, for the country as a whole, and it brought a lot of people into the women's game. And I mean, anywhere we travel, those players that are in that Nadeshiko team are recognized. I mean, it's pretty fascinating when you stop at a rest stop and use the restroom, and people, I mean, I'm telling you, from older women to grandmothers, grandfathers, to younger kids, are immediately are recognizing these players, and it's just really cool to see. It's very, very cool to see.
You've got one of those as a teammate, one of the biggest sort of Japanese icons going in Himare Soa. Have I said that right?
Yes. Yep. Fantastic. Good job.
Cheers.
That's perfect. Yes, she's a great player. I was lucky to play with her in the U.S. as well with DC. And now coming here and being able to see her again and see her play, I mean, she's just an absolute stud. I mean, there's no two ways about it. She makes such a big impact. She plays such a huge role offensively and defensively. And more important, she's just a good person. I mean, you can come to her and talk to her about anything on the field or off the field, and you know you're going to get a truthful answer, and you know you're going to get a positive answer. So it's just, I'm really, really thankful to play with one of the world's best players. And I truly think she is one of the world's best players.
So do you see yourself staying in Japan for the foreseeable future?
I'm not sure. For right now, I'm just kind of living in the moment and enjoying my time here. And I'm thankful for the time that I have here. I'm thankful for all the experiences, both on and off the field. So for now, I'm just taking it, you know, game by game. For now, you know, having clinched the league title with 5 games left, next will be the IWCC, which is the Mob Cast Cup, where we played Lyon last year.
Brilliant.
And then we have Empress Cup after that. So for now, my focus is doing the best that I can for this team. And kind of after season finishes, then I will decide then.
You're obviously no stranger to playing in America. I had a look at the Western New York Flash squad that you're a part of, and it's a who's who of world's women's football, isn't it? It's an amazing team.
Yes, that was a ton of fun, and the team was great. I mean, everyone got along. It was a fun atmosphere off the field, on the field. So, you know, when things are going good off the field, it's a lot easier to play together on the field, and everyone just kind of clicked and enjoyed their time together. But it was an absolute, I mean, it was an amazing team. And, you know, the Flash did a great job at keeping a professional environment and providing that professional environment for everyone. So, that was definitely something. That team and that year and winning that championship is definitely something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. I mean, those players were so great. And it was just, it's just one of those things where I'm every day I'm playing with these players and I'm continuing to grow. I mean, with players like that, I mean, there's so much you can do. There's so much growing you can do.
If you had to pick one to say, yep, she was the best in training, who would you pick?
Ooh, it's hard because everyone was so different. Everyone's style was so different. I mean, I would have to say the forward line was definitely one of the best forward lines I've ever played with in my entire life.
Right.
Sink and Marta and Alex, I think, is my, you know, ideal forward line. So that was just a ton of fun. But, I mean, to pick one single person is hard because their styles were so different and they were so good in certain areas. And that's what made us, as a whole, a great team and able to win a championship.
As a British podcast, we're obviously quite delighted to see Gemma Davison's name in there as well.
Yes, yes. And she was a great player. She was so nice. Is she with Arsenal now?
She is, yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. Yeah, she's a great player. So good with her speed and taking people on. I mean, I was really impressed with her. I remember our first practice that she came. I think she came into season maybe slightly late from what I recall. And I recall that because I remember her speed and the way that she could just attack and dribble with the ball like that. Was amazing. So I think she's a great player, and I'm really happy that she's finding a lot of success with Arsenal right now.
And just finally, I've got to ask about, obviously, the NWSL. As an American overseas, are you hoping that, obviously, this league gets it right? Because, obviously, we've had previous incarnations that haven't quite gone well.
Yes, I do. I definitely do. I think it's great for women's soccer in America. I mean, I think it's, we need a league that the younger players can look up to and continue to dream to want to play professional soccer in the United States. I think, you know, my situation was a very lucky situation with coming to Sky Blue and INAC being willing to want to offer to American players a contract. I mean, I think it's a very unique situation. Rather than lucky, I should say unique. So I think that it's important that America has that opportunity for players who want to continue to chase their dreams and pursue their dreams. I think it's important to have a league.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.
So there we go, a particularly interesting story of a player who made the most of a very unique opportunity. And that brings us very quickly to the end of the show. Kieran, you need to do a few things like a book review.
I do, yeah. And actually, it's not quite the end of the show, mate. Sorry. I felt a bit bad that I didn't know who Birmingham were playing in the Champions League, so I thought I'd better look it up. They're playing Zorki of Russia, which is an interesting name, isn't it? They overcame Thor, who are from Iceland, and that is an impressive achievement because Thor in qualifying overcame Captain America, the Hulk and Iron Man. So,
whoa!
I know, yeah, so that is impressive. Well done, Thor, but well done, Zorki, for overcoming them. So, yeah, big game for Birmingham against Zorki of Russia. So apologies, I didn't know who that was earlier.
Moving on. You can contact us by the usual ways. Twitter at WFPod, on email as well, which is thewfpod@gmail.com. And then you can check out our blog. And as I mentioned earlier, Tony Duggan has one up there now, all about England versus Wales. So that's the wfblog.wordpress.com.
And we should also mention that we have closed our Facebook page down. Sorry about that, guys. There weren't many people liking the page anyway, but we were struggling to keep up with it, so we didn't think it was worth having live. So we'll focus our attentions on Twitter and on the blog. But just one other thing. We were sent a copy of a book which was rather dodgily titled Girls with Balls, but it is a good book. It's by Tim Tate, and it is a historical look at women's football. Some really interesting stuff in there. I've managed to have a read of it. Fans of women's football will be really interested to sort of look at the fact of the difficulties and the struggles that women had back in the day of really trying to challenge men and, you know, some of the issues that they had. So definitely worth a read. So that's Girls with Balls, and it's by Tim Tate.
Yeah, certainly another great story. We've also got to say a massive thank you to everyone who helped fill out our survey that we ran recently. We're always on the lookout to improve this podcast. So everyone who's helped us do that, a massive thank you to you. So I think that's all for now. So I'll sign off, say goodbye, thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you again next time.
And I will say thanks very much also, and see you all soon.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.